Welcome to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoffer of Northwestern University. The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it. Today we're talking about cable-stayed bridges with Denny Pate, who is Senior Vice President and Principal Bridge Engineer with Figg Engineering in Tallahassee, Florida, where he designs bridges, particularly cable-stayed bridges. These have become perhaps the most common design for longer bridges around the world. Denny Pate has been involved in the design of well more than 30 of these bridges, and today we're talking to him about what seems to be now a very common design. Welcome. I'm really glad you're talking with us today.
Yes, good afternoon.
I've been traveling a little bit lately, and in the past few months, I've seen cable-stayed bridges in use or under construction in Holland and Denmark, in St. Petersburg, Russia, Brooklyn, over the Panama Canal, the Ohio Hudson, and St. Croix and Mississippi rivers. First, give us a verbal description of this design for people who are not familiar with it.
Okay. When you identify cable-stayed bridges, all the cables are straight lines, basically like a harp, as opposed to a suspension bridge such as the Golden Gate, where you have the big, long, draping parabolic cable. So a cable-stay bridge is distinctive in that the stay cables are essentially straight lines like a harp.
So structurally, how does that work in contrast, for example, to the suspension bridge?
Well, the cable stay bridge, each of the cable stays is essentially like a steel rubber band which has been stretched with a hydraulic jack and is in tension. And it is the tension in the cables that actually carries the weight of the bridge back to the pylons or towers, if you prefer, that then the weight of the bridge goes down the tower to its foundation. But the vertical component of the force in each of the tension stay cables actually carries the full weight of the bridge over the length of where all the cables are along the length of the span.
So I have a lot of friends who see these bridges and say, oh, I saw a suspension bridge, but they're not. What's the difference?
Again, visually, the primary difference is a suspension bridge has a draped, sort of parabolic-shaped cable, like the Golden Gate Bridge or some of the others here in the U.S., whereas stay cable bridges, the cables are essentially perfectly straight lines from the tower all the way down to the deck and anchor on the deck. So that's the principal difference between the two bridge types, suspension versus stay cable.
It seemed to me that, if I remember the structural engineering I studied a long time ago, that cable on a suspension bridge is carrying a very heavy load because the tension is not directly in the direction of the load itself, the force itself.
That is correct. Obviously, suspension bridges have been around for hundreds of years in one form or another, whereas the cable-stayed bridges, while the technology has been well understood for centuries perhaps, it's probably only in the last 30 years or so that we had the computational horsepower of our computers to do the detailed analysis that it takes to look at a cable-stayed bridge and its construction step by step by step. The magnitude of those computations and their extensive nature basically made designing them in pre-computer era basically impossible. So that's why you see so many more of them now, is because we have the computational means to do the analysis that historically was not available.
So it's not a matter that somebody 40 or 50 years ago said, hey, this is a unique new design, let's try this.
No, I mean, there's obviously been advances in material technology, which are helpful to this bridge type, but the real thing is the computational capabilities of modern computers versus historical hand methods that allowed on slide rules and other types of hand calculations years ago. The amount of numbers that can be processed and tracked and the ability to do that with quality control is just completely different with modern computer technology.
But I'm thinking that breakthrough alone doesn't explain to me why these bridges have become so popular. What are the economics of construction compared to other designs?
Well, for long-span bridges within the region where they reside, cable-stay bridge is by far more cost-effective than other bridge types, you know, particularly when you get into spans in excess of 1,000 feet. Sort of the general range for traffic bridges, not pedestrian bridges, but highway bridges, probably for cable-stay bridges from roughly 500 feet to 2,000 feet is sort of the generalized range for highway bridges, basically on current technologies and the economics behind that. Suspension bridges also require a specific geology in that if you look at historical suspension bridges, they're always where there's rock near the surface where they have their big anchor blocks for those big cables. So a cable-stay bridge can be built in just about any geology, whether you have clay or sands or whatever, whereas suspension bridges are almost uniquely related to having rock as a subsurface material near the surface.
And those anchor blocks are, as I would describe it, at the ends. We're not talking about the towers.
At the very ends of the big cables for the suspension bridges, yes.
So you don't really need that for the cable stay design because all the load is going to the pylon.
Yes, in both a cable stay bridge and a suspension bridge, the vertical towers carry a huge amount of load, which is essentially the weight of the full length of the bridge, at least within the suspended part where all the cables are. And so both of those share the fact that there is a very large vertical load at the tower. The difference with a suspension bridge is because of the way the draped cable anchors into a big, what's called a thrust block at the end of the outermost ends of that big cable, they apply large lateral forces, horizontal forces to the soil, or in this case, rock, is where you see them for, say, the bridges in New York or the Golden Gate Bridge there in San Francisco. So cable stay bridges, the horizontal forces of the cables are contained within the bridge, whereas in suspension bridges, the horizontal force has to go directly to Mother Earth or the soil.
And what's the common deck design? I see a lot of segmental concrete designs. Is that the typical way to put the deck together?
Certainly segmental bridges are an economical way to do concrete-type cable-stayed bridges. Certainly there is a similar technology in steel cable-stayed bridges as well, where they have a steel framing system that anchors the cables and then has concrete deck panels on top of it. But most of the ones that I've been involved with are, in fact, segmental bridge construction.
And you said that the typical range of spans for cable-stayed bridges is about 500 to 2,000 feet. Are there really some in the 2,000 range? I guess I'm not familiar with them.
There are a few internationally, not here in the United States. The new bridge that we're designing in Texas with the 1,661-foot span will be the longest bridge of its type in the U.S., to my knowledge. I don't believe in the United States we have any in excess of 2,000 feet. Internationally, there are a few in Japan and China.
And for longer bridges, I presume that you start thinking about suspension bridges?
When you get beyond 2,000 feet, you certainly could do that with cable stay technology if the soil was appropriate. A suspension bridge would probably be more economical. But if you're in a mountainous terrain or if you're over a river or where the geology doesn't allow you to use suspension bridges, certainly a cable stay bridge could be built at longer than 2,000 feet, and they have been. But again, very specialized circumstances where I need a very long span, and a cable stay bridge is the only way to get there.
And for shorter bridges, shorter than 500 feet, they're truss bridges
typically,
or concrete?
Other technologies are more efficient. Box girder designs or, in some cases, arch bridges could be appropriate depending on the site constraints with navigation clearances and other types of things. As you get down into even shorter spans, you know, the big girders, concrete girders, steel girders, pushing 300 or even 400 feet are becoming fairly common. And then there's a unique sort of halfway between a girder bridge and a cable stay bridge, which is called an extrados bridge, or extrados, some people pronounce it, which is sort of halfway between a post-tension girder bridge and a stay cable bridge. And we're beginning to see that technology. There have been several of those built in Japan. There's one here in the United States that has recently been completed. So that's sort of a hybrid that allows you to get below the 500-foot span range and still be very cost-effective.
Yeah, that's one I've looked at, and I think I have to confess that I don't really understand it, so we need to save another podcast interview to learn more about that one. But take me back to cable-stayed bridges. How are they built? How are they constructed? What's the sequence?
Well, typically, cable-stayed bridges are built using the cantilever method, which is starting at the tower. Pieces are incrementally added, first on the left side, then on the right side, and back and forth, lengthening the bridge as you move away from the tower. And then at each location, when you reach where a new stay cable attaches to the bridge, then that new stay cable would be put in. It would be tensioned with a hydraulic jack. And once that operation is completed and that cable stay is now helping to carry the weight of the bridge, then you begin to add new pieces beyond that last stay cable until you get to the location of the next stay cable, and then you install that stay cable, and the cycle repeats itself, adding pieces of the deck, install a new stay, add some more pieces to the deck, install another stay. So it just grows in length until you reach the middle of the longest span.
So typically you're not using fosswork?
Typically not. We tend to avoid using auxiliary methods to stabilize the cantilevers. We prefer that the pylon be sufficiently strong to do that. There are certainly cases where supplemental systems to help wind conditions, turbulent wind basically, there have been cases where tie cables have been used or other temporary piers or something like that to help stabilize the bridge during the construction period until it can be completed in the middle of the main span joined, and then those temporary things would be removed.
And what about the cables? How are they made? I assume they're made off-site and delivered to the site, but they're heavy and large.
Actually, those are typically fabricated on-site. There's a couple of different technologies that exist, but most of the modern bridges, we're using basically pre-stressing strand, just like you would in a post-tensioning tendon, 6/10 inch diameter, 7-wire post-tensioning strand, 270 KSI strength steel, very high strength steel. And it's just a very, very large post-tensioning tendon. The largest that we as FIG have done is 156 of those strands inside of a single stay cable bundle. So it's a huge cable when you have that many strands.
So you're assembling that on site?
Yeah, the cable, of course, comes in on, just like post-tension tendons, comes in on a reel. Each of the 6-inch strands is, you know, there's several thousand feet coiled up on a reel that comes to the site, and those are unrolled and cut to length in the field environment, and then they are typically installed using at least current technologies, one strand at a time. When the new cable is being erected, you pull in one strand, you tension it. You pull in another strand, you tension that one. You pull in a third strand, you tension that one, and you keep doing that until you get all the strands stressed in the new cable.
So in some respects, it's sort of the way suspension bridges are built, because for suspension bridges, you're basically weaving the cable in place. And here you're saying you use one strand at a time, put that cable together, and then post-tension each strand.
There is a parallel to how the suspension cables were installed historically, where they would pull in one wire from left to right and then pull in a second wire from right to left, and they go back and forth and weave the big cable one wire at a time. And so the current stay cable installation techniques are similar to that, in that we are installing and stressing each of the strands as we install them.
You've been an innovator in the design of the cradles that hold the cables at the top of the pylons. Can you tell us about that design and why it has proved to be important?
The stay cable cradle is an invention that was developed to overcome the interaction of the strands in the tower. In older stay cable bridges where the cable is continuous through a curved steel pipe, the strand that's on the bottom of the pipe gets partially crushed or loaded from the top by the stay strands that are above it. And as stay cables get larger and larger and larger, there was a perception that the strand on the bottom would be harmed by the large forces above it. And the stay cable cradle was developed specifically to prevent that interaction. So with a stay cable cradle, each of the strands is housed over the curved length in a little stainless steel tube individually. So when you stress one strand, it doesn't touch any other strand. So there's no force of one strand pushing on another. And so the cables are protected in that environment from one to the other. And then because of that separation created by the cradle, the individual strands are then replaceable for future inspection and or maintenance, where if you had a reason to take a strand out and look at it for inspection purposes, or if you wanted to replace that with a more modern material, carbon fiber or something like that in the future, it would be easy to do that because each strand can be removed one at a time and replaced one at a time.
So that seems to be a tremendous advantage for the sustainability of these bridges, both inspection and maintenance and replacement if necessary, without really disassembling the bridge. You can do one at a time.
And you can maintain live traffic on the bridge while you're doing that because, you know, when you replace one strand out of many, it's such a small percentage of the overall cable. The behavior of the bridge is not adversely affected. And so without any restrictions whatsoever to the use of the bridge traffic, you can do a full cable replacement one strand at a time and could replace all the strands and all the cables over some period of time with that technology and completely with no disruption to traffic.
So have other cable-stay bridge designers picked up this concept?
Yes, most of the cable stay suppliers, the vendors, if you will, who sell cable stay systems, have developed somewhat similar designs to the cradle. Each of them is a little different for reasons of, you know, commercial interests. But in a general sense, the strands are continuous through an individual hole within something that is similar to the cradle design and does allow replacement of those strands in the future.
So there are some spectacular cable-stayed bridges around. I think one of the real appeals to the layman is the aesthetics. It's a very appealing straight line. It's bridges as art, which I believe is the term that your firm uses to describe your work. What should we watch for now? What's on the drawing board or under construction or out there that you consider to be among the most spectacular of the cable-stayed bridges?
Well, as far as new designs, we are designing, again, I mentioned earlier, the two bridges in Texas, the two longest concrete cable stay spans in the United States, both at different places in Texas. One is in Houston, and the other will be in Corpus Christi, Texas. And the bridge in Corpus Christi is going to be visually spectacular with the lighting system that will be part of that project, and its nighttime appearance will be unlike anything in the world. So that will be a very much a visual showpiece for that community. But you're correct. Aesthetics is something that cable-stay bridges are inherently beautiful. They're slender. There's the graceful appearance of the stay cables that in some sense mimics the appearance of sails on a ship, perhaps. And there are many different arrangements of cables that can be done to create differences in appearances at relatively little cost increments to alter the geometry of the stay cables. So it's a very flexible form of bridge that allows you to be creative with the aesthetics.
So functionally desirable, efficient, and attractive, all good attributes, and also maintainable, which seems to be in the long run very important to us. I'll keep watching for these bridges. I think that we have on our website a picture of that bridge. It's over the shipping channel, I think, in Corpus Christi, and I hope everybody will take a good look at it. Denny, thank you so much for giving us a strong education in cable-stayed bridges. We'll watch for your work as we travel around the world.
Very good. My pleasure.